there could be a point in 2 years where we bring in something drastic and we just ruin footy for a couple of years and we're going to take it out again.
I know Whitey wasn't overly wrapped with the Thursday night footy, but I think it's the best time slot in footy. The
beauty about our club is we rock up to training every day, and training's so fun. Everyone wants to train.
The overwhelming feeling is unsatisfaction, and purely because we were so close to winning the whole thing.
As an opposition coach, who presents every single week, but in the end, we play our brand of football the same. I think they're just finding work for someone.
Your ticket into the heart of football. Welcome to the Breakfast Club's Inner Sanctum.
Yes, yeah, great to have you with us on the Inner Sanctum for another season. 2019 just started, and we've got a great crew that will be joining us through the weeks of the AFL home and away season. And a big welcome back today to the champ from the Western Bulldogs, Marcus Bontempelli. Good morning, Bont.
Morning, Half.
Nice to have you with us again, mate.
Thanks, mate. It's good to be back.
He was just telling me how he doesn't sleep in, but you get a late shift here. I had to come in at 7 o'clock in previous years. As a player. 7:30, and he had two options.
Yeah, no, they treat you pretty well here after you've done a year, so maybe next year.
Premiership playing.
Well, let's well, flags, it's a superstar type.
Yeah, exactly.
It's currency. Flags are currency around here. So you get the late shift at 8 o'clock, we'll take you. We'll take you. And you're on your way, Bont, after a solid win on Saturday night at Marvel Stadium. They call it Eddie Marvel Stadium, because they came for you, didn't they, late?
No, they did. You always expect that, I think, especially with the Sydney Swans outfit, that you know they're going to throw sort of everything at you until probably, you know, they couldn't in the end, which was... You know, there were some good signs for us early up until probably the third quarter, and then early in that fourth they really came at us. So, you know, we were challenged. But as a young team, you're probably, although you can look at the room for improvement and say, oh, what happened there at the start of that fourth quarter, for us to be able to probably galvanise and come together and find a bit late in that fourth quarter is a good thing for us going forward.
Just the 29 for you, just the 10 votes and the coaches, just the perfect game. Is that how we start the season every year? Is that just what we do?
Yeah, it wasn't bad. it's always you look forward to obviously the start of the season sort of every year, but it's nice to start sort of the year off reasonably well, and hopefully can continue to build from there.
How did you find the lack of runner, particularly late in the game? Did it, were you conscious of it?
Not really. Like you're so in the game, I guess, in the nature of, you know, what's happening right in front of you, that you probably don't take as much notice of probably the runner, in a sense. We were probably a little bit keen to have it. You know, you probably heard some of Bevo's commentary in the lead up to the game, and he was pretty vocal around the need and the necessity for it, particularly as a young team trying to grow and adjust to the change and the ebbs and flow of the game. But I felt like we got it right on the weekend. We went into the game with a plan around what we're going to do from the boundary line, and it had some directives and cards and stuff there that would help us change in and out of modes throughout the game. So I felt like that worked pretty well for us. But, you know, I understood all the commentary around, particularly as a young team, you do sort of sometimes need a little bit more guidance and a little bit more alertness, because the game is so consuming, because obviously what's happening right in front of you is the key focus. And for young players who are just trying to do what they think's right and play the game on its merits, sometimes the changes in numbers can, you know, can slip your mind or pass you by a little bit easily. So it's a challenge for us as a leadership group and older players to be able to control that better and communicate better throughout the game.
So changes that happen late in the game, positional changes, I think Aaron Norton went back towards the end of the game. How does that happen if you don't have the runner telling you?
Well, now it's probably going to happen from a player coming on off the bench. Typically, it'll be a message that's sent to, you know, to three different players. You'll try and get to someone across each line. It is tough because if you're thrown straight into a situation where you've got to make a play on the ball or whatnot, you don't get a chance straight away. That can then peter out, you know, to 3, 4, 5 minutes of actually being able to get it done. The other thing is we've got signs and symbols on the boundary line. So we had Benny Graham, who's our, you know, interchange steward there, with cards and whatnot and whistling to get players' attention on the ground too. That's how
you also have doctors and physios that can go tend to players' injuries during...
Yeah.
Well,
even they're not allowed on as much.
Can't elaborate on
that. You've been there.
Yeah, because I think it was interesting that you were able to make some adjustments, because it was, you know, considering how vocal Luke had been about the runner, I thought this is irony here, is that it's going to be really testing you late. But you did make the required adjustments.
Yeah, we did. And it's sort of the evolution of every time a new rule or something changes and comes in, that you're not always going to, you know, hit it out of the park straight away. So for us, we went in with a plan of you know, how are we going to, you know, support this change better? And then it's more or less, all right, let's wait and see. You got to wait and see sort of how it works. I think round one for us, we'd probably say it was a tick from that point of view, because we were able to change, you know, in and out of a few different situations pretty well.
Just one last one on this. Are you more likely now to stay on the ground longer because of your ability to go forward, particularly late in games? I think we've seen over the weekend in the games that were quite close, there were times where key players couldn't get on the ground because it was a close finish and they didn't want to make the change, and it could have cost teams games. What about you in the last 8 minutes? Are you wanting to make sure you're on the ground so you don't get caught off?
Yeah, well, I'd like to be on the ground. I think every sort of player's, you know, who appreciates not the bigger moments, but being able to influence the game, particularly late in the clinches, is similar. But it'll all come down to probably rotations, I think, in terms of, I'll take inside sort of what we're like is each quarter we have a rotation board, basically, and in each quarter, it's typically the same depending on how long you've been on the previous quarter or where you've come off. But our rotations are actually almost geared towards, you know, particular players and the way they play a little bit, in terms of, you know, your speed sort of endurance players, the power players might have shorter bursts, so they might come off a bit sooner, mm-hmm. whereas your longer, more endurance-based players will be able to stay out on the ground longer. So they'll typically, you know, hold, you know, for 18, 19 minutes, get a quick sort of two or three and then come back on. So it's typically based around that. So for me, I'm sort of the middle of the quarter, which is normally pretty handy. So it means typically I'm one rotation, maybe a quarter. So I'm, you know, always sort of out on the ground, particularly late in quarters, yep. as well. Whether that's something that coaches have thought about, it's not been raised with us. It's more purely based on, you know, individuals and how they move and how they operate. So that's typically how it works.
So how's that thrown when someone is injured? What happens when someone's injured and throws that system?
Yeah, that sort of means everyone slides back then potentially a couple of minutes. So you are forced to spend a bit more time. Like, we have players that spend whole quarters out on the ground, which is an incredibly selfless sort of element to the game, particularly with how taxing it is physically. Now, they're typically your deeper sort of defenders who spend less time covering more ground, but at the same time, they're still required to, you know, to gas at times. So for their ability to save and hold and allow probably the mids to get an extra rotation or the forwards, it's sort of numbered in that sense, so that the defenders might have five rotations or six rotations a quarter, the mids might have eight or something like that. It all comes down to numbers almost in the end, but there are players that manage to spin them for the whole quarter, which gives other players a rest for longer.
Interesting. Good stuff.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Good insight.
Because I think a lot of people, and this is for you as well, BJ, a lot of the spectators, fans of the game think, oh, well, after Marcus has spent 15 minutes in the midfield, why wouldn't he just go and come out a full forward? But then when you see some of the numbers of the forwards, they end up running more than some of the mids.
Yeah, especially now that I've spent more and more time as a key forward at times, they're different in terms of what you're required to do from a, you know, a midfield perspective. You're probably more constantly moving at a, you know, a run sort of fast jog sort of ish pace, whereas, and then obviously your moments of high intensity running, whereas you, as forward, it feels like you're much more high intensity rest. So you're sort of, they're different sort of ways of, you know, of playing. But I've always found, particularly for me, probably because I'm more an endurance based athlete, that the forward role has always been a bit harder in terms of the energy required to play it. And I think that's why some of those, particularly small but, you know, key sort of forwards that manage to really dominate games are quite impressive, because their ability to move around the ground and recover quickly and then go again is quite, you know, impressive.
And it's more geared around to the team defense as well, so the ability to get up and back as a forward. So it's not a resting period, because a team defense now is the whole unit moving as one continual team. So you don't have the ability or luxury to go and sit in the goal square.
Yeah. It's like, just not like it, like it was used to in so a sense. Like, it's not a rest.
It's not a rest as such.
But a lot of people watch on television, so they don't see a lot of the sacrificial running. Or you talked about this last week about the running patterns of a four, where they're not even going to get the ball, but it's to try and disrupt defensive structures and all that sort of thing. You don't see that on television.
No, you don't. So, yeah, go and watch a game and understand, and no, don't make comment. But go and watch it from afar, and mainly from above. go sit in the third tier if you're interested in that stuff and watch what involves, as Bont's saying, you go some rest. It's not a rest. It's still involved in team defence. It's still actually really taxing. And the half forward role is generally probably the hardest role to play on the field because it involves so much up and back. And
Well, Alex Neil-Bullen will run 17, 18 Ks for a game and might only have 8 possessions, but he's played his role really well.
Ks per possession ratio is off whack there. It's out of whack there. That's hurting.
Not very efficient, old Neil Bullen.
No, but that's, I'm probably exaggerating a little bit, but you know what I mean? Like, he's playing his role, which is often to create space for others and all
or get involved in defence. What about your own development, Bont, about what have you done this year to improve all the areas that you focus on to improve your own development?
Yeah, it probably started back in sort of October, November. I decided to spend a bit of time over in the US, which was more to get a bit of a jump on the preseason and just start, you know, my conditioning a couple of weeks early. I felt like that's been the biggest help for me. Although it was only 2 weeks, it felt like it was 2 weeks of sort of quality work that allowed me to get the early symptoms of getting back to training sort of out of the way before we started back for our own preseason. So I felt like that gave me a good start, a good jump on, you know, what was to come from a pre-season point of view. And then it was probably more or less just trying to get back to, you know, some of the things that I've been able to do in the past that have helped us and myself play well at different times and just focus and hone in on those, particularly some stoppage stuff, but probably outside and being able to get out and run and use my legs at different times. So I felt like for me, from a conditioning point of view, it was the key thing. So I could work
on your general endurance and fitness?
Yeah, speed, endurance probably more so. Obviously the game becoming the way that it is, it's becoming more of a running game. You need to be more athletic. You need to be able to cover more ground with less rotation. So I wanted to sort of assist that side of things to then, you know, evolve the other parts of my game. So that was probably the biggest focus for me going into the preseason. And then probably the other ones were, you know, being a better forward craft sort of player. It's not a natural craft like sort of midfield, and especially when you play a position for particularly a longer period of time, and then to move into a obviously the forward side of the ground at different times, being able to you know, provide more than just a target is probably some of the things I've been focusing on as well. So there's always a number of things, but they were probably the two key ones.
That is the voice of Marcus Bontempelli, 21 past 8 on the Breakfast Club. He's part of our Inner Sanctum team again in 2019. Just been told by Mickey Blue Eyes that after 8:30 on Racing Pulse, Mike Maroney, Mark Newnham, and a trainers forum after 9 a.m. with Andrew Nicol, Greg Carpenter and John Maloney as well. So a bit happening on Racing Pulse coming up not too far away. We'll have more of the Bont from the Bulldogs after this on The Breakfast Club.
Exclusive access behind closed doors. The Breakfast Club's Inner Sanctum.
Here they come, the Dogs. There's not much more. McLean, he's got Bontempelli running back. Bontempelli will get it. He'll run in and kick a massive goal for the Dogs.
That was the sealer on Saturday night for the Dogs in their 17-point win over the Sydney Swans to get them off to a winning start in 2019. Marcus Bontempelli, the man who kicked that goal, as part of our Inner Sanctum on The Breakfast Club.
What's it like when you do that? Like, I'm on the couch watching it on Saturday night and I'm excited for you, but excited just because it was a really good game. But living that moment out, crowd going crazy and you kick the winning goal.
Oh, it's obviously pretty cool to be in that situation. A lot sort of has to go right for you then to be sort of at the end of it or in that moment. But it's a pretty cool feeling. It still excites me, like that part of the game. Like, I'll never get bored or sick of being in those situations, or just kicking a goal in general is always quite nice. But particularly in certain moments during games where other teams are pressing and coming, and it just sort of helps to steady. Because we were searching for one a little bit late there, particularly with Sydney pushing and really pressing us, and we couldn't quite get the ball out of their half at different times. So sometimes it just takes, you know, you got to win normally a pretty critical contest at some point along the chain. You don't normally get any freebies, particularly late in games. So for Toby and Mitch to and Sammy Lloyd lay that tackle, there was all key sort of little moments that lead up to the goal that are probably more crucial than the actual goal itself. So that for me is the bigger thing. It's like, well, you look at, more importantly, what happened before it to then allow them, you know, the score to happen, and for those three to put in the efforts that they did and then work it out. And it was a great kick. Like, Toby screwed it across his body on his right and laid it up perfectly for me to run on and continue to go. It's something we've been working on, especially kicking the space and kicking to advantage And if that kick, you know, goes slightly left or slightly right, I miss it, or, you know, someone comes back, it hangs in the air a bit longer, you're looking at a different situation. So it was nice that it all sort of evolved the way we wanted it to.
Well, it was pretty impressive stuff, the way you finished them off in the end. You mentioned Sam Lloyd there, who came across from Richmond after plenty of years there and not being able to really crack it into their side of recent times. I must admit, I was super impressed with his impact for you guys. Was that the sort of play, the sort of role he'll play all the way through, do you reckon?
Yeah. First of all, thank you to Richmond for allowing him to come across to the Dogs, because him and Taylor Duray, both of them, I've sort of seen that in the same vein, have both had a significant influence straight away from our club perspective, both because they're a little bit older, they've been around a footy club for a little bit of time. They know, you know, they know what they're about. They know they're confident in their ability. They know what they can provide. So, from that point of view, they bring a great level of leadership and confidence to our group, which is a pretty young group still. And especially with the fact that we lost Dale Morris a couple of weeks ago and lost him out of our back line, that really then puts pressure on again some of our younger players to try and, you know, fill the void a little bit, which we've always been relatively good at. So to have them both providing just not only on-field performance, their off-field leadership has been something really, really important for us. But you can tell with Lloydie, he's a natural forward with his ability to move and read the play and hit up and influence at times. And obviously Taylor Duray's sort of courage and ability to find targets and kick the ball well as a result of probably his time at Hawthorn have been really valuable for us.
Can you give us an update on Tom Boyd and JJ on the injury and when do we expect them back?
Yep. Based on what I know, and I got sent last night, they're both a few weeks away, I think. JJ, I got a feeling, is about 2, I reckon. So he's been progressing in his training quite well. Don't quote me on it, but he's definitely he's definitely close. And I think Boyd is in a similar pattern, maybe a bit longer, maybe 3 to 4 weeks, I reckon. So with both injuries, and BJ, you'll know the lingo, it's sort of symptomatic, so you're waiting on them to, you know, to train and then pull up and you sort of it's all immediate sort of training responses that give you a better indication of timeline. So for both of them, it'll be how they pull up after the bigger sessions, the heavier sort of speed sessions. So at the minute, I think they're all tracking. They're all probably at the minute tracking for, somewhere between that 2 and sort of 4 week period. So hopefully we'll see them pretty soon.
Nice.
The win on Saturday night, just what it means to the footy club, because obviously you had a disappointing year last year. The pre-season form wasn't great and was sort of unnerved a few people. But to do that, that was the sort of footy that I remember the Dogs playing a couple of years ago. What sort of memories did it bring back for you and the confidence it puts into the group?
Yeah, it's often feel-based. I think particularly in games, you get a sense for how you're going based on, you know, your feeling around, oh, right, we're in the contest. We feel like the energy's up. And what we've always valued quite highly is our pressure and source pressure around the ball. Which has always helped us then build the rest of our game around that sort of key element. So for us, we always feel that when that's there and when that's right on, then the rest is sort of hopefully just going to grow from there. So that was probably the key thing for us late last year too. That last sort of 4 weeks, we won 3 and lost the last one by a couple of points. That when that was right on, we had every chance to win the game and then, you know, own certain patches of the game. So for us, that's probably the key thing, that everything else will stem from there. So at the minute, and based on last week, for majority of the game, that was pretty good. We've just got to find a way to, you know, maintain energy levels probably later in the game and try and, you know, maybe, you know, kick the ball around a little bit, save some energy so then we can continue attack and stop other teams from attacking on us.
So would you say that last year in particular, did your game plan change to a degree, or did you what you focused on or what you thought important changed? So it sounded like you'd gone back to simplifying it a bit and going back to what you valued.
Yeah,
premiership year.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. We, you know, it's always interesting. You can look back and reflect on, you know, why things didn't work well, but you often find it just digs you further into a hole. But you have to identify what was missing in the same sense. So it's an interesting battle without sort of going back, trying not to go backwards again. But we did. We probably just identified, well, what were the key things that made us, and this is probably for all teams that ever get themselves in a form slump, and probably all players as well, is what are the key things that, you know, make you a good player, and when you play well, the things that stand out. And for us, as a team, it was always our sort of source pressure and then our ability to move the ball sort of from there to forward and just compete. So the other thing was then reacting quickly, probably on defence and whatnot. So, but it all sort of built around the source pressure for us and our contest around the ball.
That's all very well and good, but LeBron's out of the playoffs for the first time in 14 years. Who's going to take the title?
It's a great question. I mean, Golden State don't look too... They look like they're going okay, but they're not looking too flash.
Just on idle.
They might be on idle.
Houston looked pretty good with Harden going pretty well. He had, 7 or 8 or 10 or, 50-plus point games. So that's looking impressive. But I like Giannis. Giannis, he's sensational.
I was
going to
say, do you believe in the Bucks?
Yeah, and Milwaukee. They're going pretty well. He's a tough player to stop. The other one's probably Philly to some extent with Joel Embiid going pretty well. So if they can put it together, they got a pretty good sort of starting five.
Here's your three-point shot at the moment. I saw the boy playing, shooting some hoops yesterday.
I picked up the ball the other day. I popped over to a mate's place just to do some recovery in his pool, and there was a basketball. I ran the first three shots were air balls. And it's always the same after putting down not playing for 2 months or 3 months. I'm just like, I always try to. I'm like, I'll give it a bit extra so that I don't. And the same thing happens.
Just bricks.
Not even bricks. I didn't even hit the backboard. So anyway,
we've got a final on time. Wednesday tomorrow night. Yeah, MSAC Basketball League.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, you play? Do you?
Are you down low in the post? Or what's your role?
Just pop up with the ball in my hands just when we need to. I'm just happy to see. Yeah.
Just you're patrolling across half that.
Yeah.
When you haven't got possession, are you pointing to everyone?
I play with Andrew McQualter, and he reads cues really early. And the opposition tend to ball watch a lot, so often I play centre in defence. Who's play zone defence?
You don't come across Bob Murphy at all, do you? He's not in the same league. Yeah. Yeah,
probably a league above me.
I doubt it. I've seen Bob play. I doubt it. But yeah,
we'll get that 3-point shot back. You got to get that back, mate. Can't have you throwing bricks all year. That's no good for anyone. Nah, and good luck on Sunday. The Hawks at the MCG is going to be a cracker for you boys and the Hawks as well. Hope you go well.
No, thank you very much.
Go get him. Marcus Bontempelli, who will have plenty of time through the Inner Sanctum year on the Breakfast Club. That is it for us. Good stuff, BJ.
Thanks, Half.
We'll catch
good
you
luck
next time.
To you.
Thank you very much.
I won't see you again.
Go to the Blue Baggers. I know you're on board.
Where are you playing? It's a way game.
Adelaide Oval.
Yep.
Adelaide Oval Sunday.
Hostile territory.
Hostile.
Sell out.
They'll get 25, I reckon.
25?
I reckon they'll get 25.
How many are they getting?
I reckon they'll get about that. Yeah, about that.
They'll get
hopefully 20. Adelaide turn out. And
they will. There was 14 there on the weekend against
it's good.
Whoever they played. Geelong.
Yep.